Perspectives on Oregon agriculture, challenges and opportunities to be found in 2017, almost 18. Alexis Taylor was appointed director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture by Governor Kate Brown December last year. As director, she works with the governor and legislature as well as agricultural, conservation, and consumer groups to carry out the state's agricultural policy. ODA has a threefold mission of ensuring food safety, consumer protection, and protecting natural resources, marketing Oregon agricultural products around the state, around the country, and the world. Please join me in welcoming Alexis Taylor. Thanks, Alexis.
Well, thank you for that introduction. And I should have known that being 2 minutes early to a group of farmers actually meant I was 10 minutes late. So I apologize. I always know there is something farm or ranch related going on at the convention center when I pull in downstairs and there's just a sea of pickups. So it took me a bit longer than I had planned to find parking. Since I am relatively new to many of you, this may be the first time I'm before you, I thought I'd take a couple minutes just to introduce myself before I really get into some of the department work. I am originally from what I like to call far, far, far eastern Oregon, also known as Iowa. I grew up on a farm there, a pretty standard farm in Iowa, corn, beans, and then a small cattle operation. It's been in my family for 150 years this year, so as long as Oregon's been a state, my family's been farming that same farmland. I joined the U.S. Army Reserves when I was in high school, and I spent 8 years in the military. When I graduated from college, I decided I didn't want to stay in Iowa, so I decided to move to D.C., and I spent 12 years in D.C., working for a couple different members of Congress, an Iowa congressman, a Montana senator, and then moving to USDA. And I spent the last 4 years in D.C. at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, where I oversaw three of the 17 agencies that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has. About last summer, so a year and a half ago, I decided I was going to, what I thought, move closer to home, move back to the Midwest. So I started job hunting exclusively in the Midwest. You can tell, as good at time as I am geography, because I overshot by about 2,000 miles and I ended up here in Oregon. But it's really been a great nearly 11 months now on the job, and really had a great it's a great opportunity. It's an exciting state. It's an exciting agriculture sector I get to work with. And then it's a great department that I get to be a part of. Most of you, I'm sure all of you, are familiar with certain aspects of what the department does. I'll just take a minute to kind of talk about the full mission of the department. We are really divided into three core mission areas. One, to promote economic development and expand market opportunities for Oregon agricultural products, which is where my background really lies in, particularly my time I spent at USDA. To ensure food safety and consumer protection. This piece, I think, is the one we talk about, or we don't talk about very often, but really touches every single Oregonian. If you fly out of PDX, we certify the scales that weigh your bags to make sure you're not over 50 pounds. When you buy a bag of apples, we certify those scales. And then we're ensuring that all the food that's being produced in Oregon and is produced in a sanitary way, so really touching everybody in the state. And then we protect the natural resource base for present and future generations. We have 37 programs at the department. All of them really revolve around those three missions, and they're really interrelated. ODA is unique in state government, where we regulate, but we also promote for an industry. That can cause some tension, but I think it also makes us a stronger agency. President Eisenhower has a great quote that I actually have framed in my office, and it's much how I have tried to approach the promotion side, but now as a new regulator in my role at the department, also the regulatory side. He said, "Farming looks mighty easy when your plow is a pencil and you're 1,000 miles away from a cornfield." To me, it's what makes sense in my office with my top staff as we're talking about an issue. might make sense. But when you're out on the ground for folks like yourself, it might not make any sense at all. So really to try and bring a common sense, practical approach to everything we're doing around those three core missions. Part of the reason, because of that approach that I've really tried to bring to the department, I have been undertaking a 36-county tour, year tour, in my first year on the job. I'm very happy to announce that I'm at County 31, and next week I am heading down to Southwest Oregon to knock out three more. So I'm counting my first year starting at the middle of January, so I am on a very much downhill slope, and it's been really wonderful to get out and to see the diversity of what we're growing, how we're growing it, and who's growing it. We talk about diversity a lot. I, you know, read a lot about diversity of Oregon agriculture when I first took this job. But what that actually meant is so different now, 10, 11 months on the job and having seen it. You know, some of the challenges that I hear, I constantly hear about succession planning from farmers, whether they have children taking over their farming operation or ranching operation, or whether they're not sure who's going to take it over. It is, no matter what part of the state I've been to, what part of agriculture I've been in, everyone is thinking about it and struggling with it. It's actually something my own family is struggling with as we speak. Who's going to take over our century farm? One other thing I've heard a lot about is water. Water challenges in Burns is very different than Tillamook, but everywhere you go, if you don't have water, you can't grow anything. And so it's something I've heard quite a lot about, and obviously ODA plays, I think, a really important role in the state around the Ag Water Quality Program. I'm going to switch gears a little bit to just what we saw this year and what might be coming at the down the pipe at Oregon Agriculture. So I'll start with the 2017 legislative session. I would never suggest to any of my counterparts starting a week before the legislative session begins, but I definitely had some extensive on the job training around all the issues and the landscape that Oregon agriculture, food and beverage, the sector is really facing. Really for us, a lot of the legislative session, as for I think every agency, focused around budget. Obviously we had a pretty substantial budget shortfall, and everyone really had to look at cuts. Luckily for the department, a lot of what was actually cut happened in funding shifts. When you look at our general fund, we lost about $3.5 million, but many of those were funding shifts in our food safety program and the pesticides program. So we did have to, we are tightening our belt. I think, you know, as we're looking at what we've done historically, what we want to continue to do, how we prioritize what we continue to do, it's not necessarily a situation where we just do more with less. We can't do everything potentially that we did 10 years ago. We have less money to do it. And so really trying to think through with the industry on what we're doing, what brings the most value, particularly on some of the market promotion side of things, and helping open markets for folks like yourself. One other big area that we focused on through the session, but then also a big part of our work in going into the years to come, is around Japanese beetle eradication. We had a large population of Japanese beetle found up in the Cedar Mill neighborhood of North Portland, and working to eradicate it. We have, last year, we were given, or last biennium, around a little over $800,000 to do some of the work. We were trapping through the summer to see what the population did, and I would say we knew it was going to be bigger. It is bigger. It's bigger than what we thought. In around 2,000 traps, we caught around 22,000 Japanese beetle. The good news, though, even with that bad news, is that we had the area correct. It's about double the hot spot. The epicenter is the correct area where we had initially done the treatment last year. And so we're really looking at probably at least a five-year project from now going forward to eradicate it, but we do have a high confidence that we are going to be able to eradicate it. We were before the Interim Ways and Means Committee in November, And we plan to get approved through the short session in February $1.3 million to undertake a similar eradication effort in the same neighborhood of Cedar Mill. We're going to be working to treat a little under 2,000 acres on a little over 5,500 individual home properties. So it's a big undertaking, but I think it's one so important because this this beetle, Japanese beetle, is not established anywhere west of the Mississippi. And so this is kind of ground zero, and I think we can show that we can prevent it from becoming established. What was really why it's so important is our initial economic analysis was day one, if it becomes established, $48 million of initial impact to Oregon agriculture. That's in quarantine of our product and then increased pesticide use. So it's a big dollar figure up front. And so that's why we're at the department and as the state really taking it so seriously. Looking a little forward to the 2018 short session, I know I talked a little bit about it with the Japanese beetle, but I think another one that is going to be a hot topic is around cap and invest. Obviously, the governor is very supportive of a really clean energy jobs economy. There are a lot of proponents in the Senate and the House, in the legislature as a whole, around Oregon having a cap and invest type climate model. Similar to California, but different, I think, in some ways. It is something we're focusing or following closely at the Oregon Department of Agriculture. We had a Board of Agriculture meeting last week in the Portland area, and we actually had the deputy director from the California Department of Agriculture teleconference in to talk about the California model, lessons learned 15 years after it was implemented, how ag fit into the puzzle, some of the concerns they learned along the way. And I think that's really been helpful for the board, but also for me as we're thinking through how agriculture can be part of the solution in really a voluntary incentive-based type way. I think there are some big concerns. The term they use is leakage, and it's industries that could kind of pick up and move, traded sectors. And the good news is agriculture as a whole is not captured under the emissions cap. There's an opportunity for agriculture to benefit from some of the proceeds that might be generated from a cap, an invest type model on the invest side. But there are food processors that may be captured, and though there's a couple big ones that I think ensuring that it's written in a way that we don't drive them out of state and then inadvertently really hurt our farmers or ranchers is going to be really key to kind of the conversation in February from an agriculture perspective. I wanted to also mention a couple things, I think, on the marketing side of things, because I know we do a lot of work at the department with the seed industry there. We're working on an Oregon food, agriculture, and beverage brand. We have concluded what we are kind of dubbing phase one in that process. And that really what we looked at phase one was, is there value to the industry to have a brand? And then how would we go about establishing it? I think they tried to establish a kind of an Oregon brand toolkit 15 years ago, but I'm fairly certain it was just a bunch of people from the government got in a room, said this is what the brand is, here industry, go use it, and I'm not sure it was really utilized by the sector. So what we're looking at, so we've kind of completed phase one. What we have found is yes, there is value, and yes, people would use it. And we looked at a lot of the other states that had very successful brands and then a couple that had unsuccessful brands to really learn at what they did. The good news, I guess, is Oregon's coming late to the table on the idea of a food, agriculture, and beverage brand. We're only one of four states in the whole country that do not have a brand, but that actually means we can learn from all the people who have been successful. One of the most successful models out there is Florida Fresh. They have a roughly $9 to $11 million budget. I'm like, I just like $1 million of that. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. Really for us, phase two is going to be developing a broad cross-section of agricultural stakeholders and industry and grocery stores and really the end users who might utilize this brand, and bringing them together to really figure out what the brand should be. And I think one important component is that a lot of what we grow, a lot of the top 10, top 20 commodities we grow are non-food items. It's grass seed, it's Christmas trees, it's nursery products. So making sure the brand can be utilized by someone who's serving a local farmer's market, but also the grass seed grower. One of the things we really found as we polled some of the states and consumers is Oregon is known for our diversity, and a lot of other states are jealous of how diverse we are in our proximity to Asia. And really, I think we were thinking about the brand more domestically, internally in Oregon, but really externally, because so much of our product leaves for other states. But really, I think that shifted some of the focus, that there's really opportunity internationally as well to really brand Oregon as a high quality, high value producer of a whole cross section of commodities. So I think look forward more to come on that from the department, connecting to respective industries, including the seed industry. One other thing I am continuing to hear about, and I know I think it'll be more a topic of a conversation over the course of the next year, is around transportation. I know there's been some good movement and announcements from the port recently about bringing back container service. I think that's a great first step. And I do think everyone in state government, including the port, is thinking of it as a first step, really a test case to say, we can continue, that this is something that could work at the port. There are ships that can call on the port, and really looking to build upon that. And I know that is actually a piece of the larger transportation conversation right now. Another part is certainly around some rail and transload facilities, whether in Portland or in the Valley. I know the transportation package spoke to that at the end of the legislative session. So I think also more to come on what the transportation landscape looks like. But it is something I continually hear about as I really travel the countryside, go to every county. I'm hearing a lot about the concerns around transportation, and the issues are different depending on the part of the state you're in. But most of what we grow here in Oregon leaves the state. So we need to be able to get it to market, to hubs that can have, in a cost-effective manner, that can actually then leave the state. And then I think the last thing I'll touch on, maybe before I take some questions, I guess I don't know if questions are part of this, but I'd like to take some questions, is around just federal trade policy. Much of, you know, I mentioned that we really have an opportunity, I think, on branding and marketing ourselves in international markets. I recently, in October, was on a trade mission with the governor to Japan. She also went on to Hong Kong, and that's where she did some work to seal the deal on the bringing container service back to the port. And I think there's a lot of value, and hopefully value that the department can bring to different sectors and different parts of agriculture who are interested in exporting. But underlying is we need consistent federal trade policy. We can help open doors. We can help you meet and vet businesses in other countries. But we can't negotiate tariffs, and we can't negotiate the sanitary and phytosanitary requirements or the health requirements to send products overseas. And so we really need a consistent federal trade policy. I think when you look at some of the top markets for the grass seed industry, obviously there's China, but there's also Korea. And when we talk about you know, when people talk about the renegotiation of NAFTA and potentially the United States pulling out of NAFTA, the next one that's on some in the administration's target list that you kind of hear the rumblings about kind of every couple months is around the CORUS, the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement. Obviously a big market as well for the grass seed industry. There's Japan as well, which without TPP, we're going to continue to be at a tariff disadvantage there. I mentioned China. I wanted to just make one little announcement to you. We are just gearing up to announce a director's trade mission to China in May. And so you will be seeing, as an industry, the announcement come out. We're actually doing a recruitment of agriculture, food, beverage and commodities that are interested in maybe going to China with us. It's a little bit, I think, different model than the department has done in the past, trying to connect to exporters or potential exporters who maybe have not been within our Rolodex yet. So we'll be rolling that out here shortly. Obviously, China is a huge market for food, beverage, agriculture in Oregon. It can also be a very challenging market, but China is bringing on 160 middle-class households in the next 10 years. That's a lot of purchasing power. And what do they want to do? They want to buy high-quality products, fresh fruits and vegetables, meat, dairies. They also are buying homes, and so they want great nursery stock and turf for their yard. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there as well. I think with that, I'd like to say thank you. The grass seed industry has been a great partner on many efforts from the marketing side, but also to the Japanese beetle eradication. You've been one of the largest proponents of making sure that the department can go and get funding resources we need to really eradicate this, and we know we can be successful, but it wouldn't be without your support. So we appreciate the relationship we have with the industry and look forward really to continuing that relationship for years to come. And with that, I'd love to take some questions if there are any.
We have a lot of time for some questions. So yep. Now that we've got her trapped.
There's one right in the back standing.
Probably not.
Alexis, there seems to be a turf war that started and continuing when it comes to the water, especially in the Willamette Valley. You've got a DEQ, a TMDL issue with mercury. Mm-hmm. We've got a reallocation possibilities for stored water ad nauseum. Is ODA going to go to bat for agriculture when it comes to saving efforts of our local advisory committees in these watersheds, that some Senate Bill 1010 efforts, and how will ODA fight for our rights when it comes to water in, under, and through our properties?
Sure. It's a great question. It is one we are actively engaged in, not just internally. Obviously, at the department, we're talking about Senate Bill 1010. We're talking about the Willamette reallocation. We're talking about the TMDL on mercury in the Willamette, plus, you know, many other TMDLs that are going to be coming down the pipe from DEQ. We obviously spend a lot of time on water in the director's office, but we also spend a lot of time with our counterparts across our state government, but also the federal government. So I think if the question is, are we fighting for agriculture to be at the table to make sure they have access to water? Like I said, you can't grow anything. It doesn't matter if it's a plant or a livestock without water. The answer is yes. I think we understand it's an important component. There's a lot going on, particularly in the Willamette Valley with the couple that you mentioned, and just stacking those on top of each other. But we're actively talking about those weekly, if not daily, at my level with my counterparts.
Next question.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned the University of Oregon and stuff, being a Midwest farm girl. What was the biggest surprise you got to Oregon agriculture?
Wow, that's a great question. The biggest surprise I had. I would say I'm surprised every day how much time I spend on cannabis policy. That was something I was not fully prepared for. It is a Oregon crop, and so, but there are obviously a lot of challenges to having an industry that is newly regulated. I think one of the things that, I wouldn't say it's surprising, but farmers are kind of farmers everywhere you go. They grow different things. They grow it differently. They, you know, have different production practices. It wasn't until I went to work for a Montana senator that I had any concept of irrigation. I mean, it rains in the summer in Iowa. Why do you have to water your crops, right? I mean, it's just a very different concept. But really at the heart, people are the same. They love what they do. They would never want to be anyone else. They would never want a boss. They like to be their own boss. They love the land. It's, you know, their history. It's their family. And they're trying to pass it on to their children everywhere you go. Not that I thought that would be different here, but it just was really cemented the idea about really the people who are farming and ranching and why they do it every day. So.
Any other questions?
I was too brief. You guys have to ask me more questions. Yes, sir. We're in the set. I think it's early next year is when the plan is to really have that first shipment. They're planning the, right now, one call a month. And like I said, it's very much a first step, I think, of many of really rebuilding that relationship, proving that the port can function and that it can be reliable. And I think all parties want that. And so I believe early next year will be the first call. And then, sir, you had a question? So the question, I'll try and recapture it for folks who couldn't hear that, was just using my federal USDA background and how can I help ODA and working with OSU really tie closer into what the federal government is doing? Is that captures it? So I think one of the ways, we really try to do leverage, I think, my connections there when things bubble up and really have those resources and those connections who I'm easily able to call on, which I hope is a benefit to Oregon agriculture, but I think certainly to us trying to do our job at the department. One area, and I really am planning to focus on more my second year. My first year has been learning, and I think I'll probably, not that I won't be still learning next year. I think that will be a continuous role of mine here in Oregon, since we are so diverse. But really trying to figure out what's the landscape of federal resources and where potentially we aren't fully leveraging into them. I think there is some around, helping get local foods into larger institutions. Obviously, a certain kind of infrastructure is needed. USDA has some funding there. Is that something I don't think we fully leveraged or fully utilized? And how can we at ODA help various industries or communities do that? So it's definitely a priority for next year, kind of trying to see the landscape of where we are connected and where maybe there might be additional dollars. Because our budgets are getting smaller, and so to fully utilize those, I think is definitely behooves us at the department, but also agriculture in the state. And I think it's a good idea that we can certainly connect with OSU to see what other opportunities there are there, because we work closely with them.
I think we have time for one more question.
Stan Bossart, you probably don't remember me, but I was...
I do.
You was given to me for 2 hours, and I had no clue who you were. Shelly said, go take Alexis out for a couple of hours. I found you engaging, and I was fascinated with your interest in what we were doing, and the big question that stood out is, could I talk to your operator, one of your operators, preferably a female? And you engaged with that gal, and you wanted to know what she was doing, and you had something about you that was encouraging this gal to stay in agriculture and keep doing what she's doing. Fascinating person. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment. And I don't think I should take another question because I can't end on a better note than that. So thank you for having me. I'm going to stay for a little while, so I look forward to meeting more of you through the reception.